Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here on this Wednesday, March the 10th, 2021, 14 and a half, coming up on 15 minutes past the hour. And as I told you, this hour, we've got a great guest, has not been on the program in quite some time, I believe since taking his new position as the chief here in Marion, chief of police, Jay McDonald. And we'll go to Jay shortly here, the chief, but I do want to remind everybody, we're going to talk about the tragic story that happened Monday here in Marion, and then some other things going on in Marion through the top of the hour. So we'll have the chief for the remaining moments of this particular hour. But on Monday, at around 5:36 p.m., Monday, March the 8th, police responded to the 250 block of Cummins Avenue. And while they were there, they found an 80-year-old woman, Shirley Gibson, who was deceased of an apparent gunshot wound. The family dog was also deceased from a gunshot wound. And 78-year-old Ronald E. Gibson, who was Shirley's husband, was sitting at the dining room table facing away from the officers when they came in, and proceeded to stab himself in the presence of the officers. At this time, I believe that Mr. Gibson is in Columbus in a trauma center. That's the last report we had. And again, if you have any information on this story, 740-387-2222 to get the latest update and kind of hear about this tragic event. We turn to Marion Police Chief Jay McDonald. Chief, how you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good to speak with you. What happened Monday? Just take us through what went on.
Well, I think you laid out the story pretty well. We had a family relative call and asked us to go check the welfare of their relatives. And when we got there, we got no answer at the door. And based on the report from the relative and the neighbors telling us they believed they had to be inside, officers forced entry to check on the welfare and found exactly what you laid out. The first thing they saw was the dog who had been shot in the doorway. Then they saw Mr. Gibson at the kitchen table. And then Mr. Gibson proceeded to stab himself in the torso, in the stomach area. And the officers went and stopped him from doing that and began to render first aid, and then they discovered Mrs. Gibson deceased from gunshot wounds.
Mm. Do we have any idea why the family members who wanted a welfare check wanted a welfare check? Did they suspect something was going on?
They certainly didn't suspect anything like this. They thought there was perhaps a medical emergency that needed the assistance of first responders. So no one foresaw this coming to our knowledge.
To come in for officers to see this happen when Mr. Gibson was stabbing himself in the torso, as you say, in front of them, do we know what happened in that moment? Why this happened? Was there anything said? Do we know anything?
Yeah, we're not going to get into all of the details of what happened. It's still an active investigation, and obviously hasn't even began to go through any kind of a judicial process. But it is it was traumatic for the officers. Yeah. Traumatic, obviously, for those who had to come in and process that scene and deal with the aftermath of that. And we're actively investigating to try to determine what led up to all of those actions. The detectives have been working nonstop since Monday night and continue to do so.
And I understand it is an ongoing investigation, but is it believed at this time that anybody else was involved in this situation?
No, there's no evidence to believe that there's anybody involved. other than the people mentioned.
Was the weapon that was used on the dog and Mrs. Gibson, was that recovered?
Yeah, we've collected a lot of evidence. As I said, this is an active investigation, and we typically don't reveal all of the evidence or all of the facts until we're going to go through the judicial process. But we're confident in what happened. We have to now figure out why it happened, and that's what we're working on now.
We obviously know that Mr. Gibson, as you said, stabbed himself in the torso in front of the officers. Do we know what condition he's in right now?
Well, he's still in the hospital. He's had a surgery, and he is recovering from his wounds and that surgery.
And I believe we also know that there is somebody keeping an eye on him at this point.
Correct. We are actually forced to pay officers on overtime to make sure he's under guard 24 hours a day.
When you think of this story, you know, stories happen and crime happens. I mean, that's just the way it goes, unfortunately. This story, where does it rank as unusual in Marion County, Marion City?
Well, it's in my almost 28 years at the Marion Police Department, I have never encountered a story similar to this. We've had incidents that have been extremely tragic, and this is amongst those ranks. It is a bizarre set of circumstances that I've never had to experience before. Hopefully in the time I have left here at the police department that we don't have it ever again.
You know, one of the things that stuck out about this story when we first learned about it late Monday was the age of this couple, 78 and 80 years old. Is that striking to you?
Oh, it certainly is, and they are people who were not known to law enforcement. They were people who were not, on our radar for any reason. We have no call history involving them. It is a, like I said, this is just a bizarre set of facts and circumstances.
The officers who were there, who had to witness Mr. Gibson stabbing himself, how are they doing? I mean, we're all human beings. What an awful thing to see.
Well, so far so good with those officers, and we provide resources to them through various methods. The city of Marion has an employee assistance program that has counseling available. The Fraternal Order of Police, of which all of our officers are members of, provides peer support for officers who are involved in critical incidents. And then we try to look after each other. And those combination of resources are available to all of these officers, but so far the officers seem to be faring okay.
As we know, this is an ongoing investigation, and you are seeking information, if somebody would like to provide it, at 740-387-2222. Where does this go from here, in your opinion?
Well, we will continue to dig into the why of this incident. We have presented all of our reports and what we know so far to Marion County Prosecutor Ray Grogan, who has filed a warrant for the arrest of Mr. Gibson, and once he is medically cleared to be arrested, he will be arrested. And then we will figure out where it goes from there through the grand jury and through the court system.
Is it hard to figure out a why in any case?
For sure. But that why leads to the specific charge, and it is... that there may not ever be a full, complete picture of the why, but it's important to figure out, if we can, why this happened, so we can, seek justice, and so we can have a better understanding of what happened.
When we talk about the family members who called for the welfare check, thinking that nothing like this was going on, how are they doing?
Well, I haven't spoken to them since Monday night, but Monday night they were in complete shock.
Yeah, it's just an unbelievable story, and But, you know, police officers, just like the rest of us, are human beings. Is it sometimes hard when you go home at night to comprehend something like this?
Well, absolutely. And police officers in general have a higher risk of PTSD and other ailments due to the nature of the profession. They have a higher suicide rate. They have a higher divorce rate. And a lot of that can be traced to the stress and the experiences that first responders are forced to endure on behalf of the community. And it's something that law enforcement in general is becoming much more aware of, and to become much more cognizant of, and to take steps to protect our first responders in those instances.
You know, I became first aware of this on Monday evening because of the police presence over on Cummins Avenue. A couple people had said, "Hey, you know, there's a lot of activity over there." Those houses are fairly close together in that area. Was everybody cooperative? Did that part of it go okay?
Yeah, absolutely. We had no issues with the neighbors. They were cooperative in providing information if they had any to law enforcement. And as far as the mechanics of the call, everything was as it should.
You know, Chief, I wanted to have you on for the hour today because there are other things I wanted to talk about, but certainly wanted to get an update on this. But one of the interesting things of this was, I think it was on the Columbus media by 11 o'clock that night. What is it like dealing with the media in a situation like that as it's happening?
Well, we have a policy of what can and what cannot be released to the media, but it is sometimes challenging in a department our size because we don't have a dedicated communication staff like a Columbus PD would have or a highway patrol. So while I'm on that crime scene trying to make sure all of our investigative bases are covered, I'm also having to deal with phone calls from the media and you often don't know a whole lot of information at the time they want to know it. So it is a balancing act because the public certainly has a right to know what its public servants are doing. But at the same time, we have to make sure it doesn't interfere with the actual investigation, and to make sure that we're not violating victims and the rights of potential suspects in doing so. So sometimes that's why it might take us, you know, a bit to issue formal press releases and those things, because the people who are doing those things are also the ones doing the investigation sometimes.
Mm. Well, a case like this, how many people end up getting involved?
Well, it happened around 5:30 in the afternoon, which is in the middle of our second shift. I was on my way to City Hall to do the city council meeting. So I was actually in the City Hall parking lot when I got the call of this happening and was able to respond immediately. But then we called in all of our third shift officers to help us handle the regular call load. All of second shift was tied up on this, and then every single detective was called in. And we kind of do homicides different than Columbus. Homicides in Marion are an all-hands-on-deck kind of adventure, where Columbus is typically, they typically have a team of detectives who rotate because they obviously have so many more homicides. This is the third homicide since I've taken over as chief of the police department on a full-time basis, and quite frankly, that's a lot. We typically do about three in a year, and this is the third one since the end of December. So it is a... But we obviously are professionals, and we have experience in doing homicides, and we have a practice of how we do them, and we stick to our practice.
As you had said earlier, and I know, again, trust me, I understand the answers because this is under investigation, but we know pretty much what happened at this particular point. At this point, nearing 48 hours later, do we have any idea what the why might be? I know you can't tell me what the why is, but do we have any idea, any clue at all?
Oh, we have a working theory, but we will not you know, we won't be locked into a theory until all of the evidence and all of the materials get collected and put together in a timeline. And the timeline's what's important.
Not being Columbus, as you said, when the Columbus media descended upon Marion on Monday, when it hit the Columbus news, what's it like at that point to be at the station? What does it become like when the public becomes aware?
Well, I was fielding phone calls on my cell phone at the crime scene, and so was Lieutenant Gruber, who also deals with the media extensively, and he was dealing with phone calls on his cell phone. And then they show up on the crime scene, and they basically stayed out of our way until I was ready to go talk to them. And so it was, they weren't intrusive, they weren't obstructing us in any way, but it is one more responsibility during a crime scene that somebody has to become responsible for.
Chief, as we know here, you were at the crime scene. How did this impact you?
Well, I guess I could say, unfortunately, I've been to many crime scenes in my career, and I have become accustomed to violent crime scenes, but it is still it still knocks you back a step when you see a level of violence that is becoming more and more frequent. I would say it is it's not something you ever get used to, but I've unfortunately had enough experience with violent crime scenes in my long career that I know how to handle them.
Do we know why violent crimes seem to be on the uptick?
I don't. I mean, all of our major cities have experienced a rise in violent crime, and we know that from being in the Columbus media market. They certainly are experiencing a rise in violent crime, and we're seeing it all across the country in the major cities. Our 2020 numbers in Marion are not, they have not risen beyond our normal crime stats. In fact, our crime numbers are way down in 2020, and a lot of that is COVID-related. The only numbers that are up are domestic violence and drug overdoses. But the numbers of murders in the last 10 years are anywhere between 1 and 5 murders a year, and like I said, we've had 3 since the middle of December.
Mm. You know, when we talk about this and we talk about things that can happen for officers after they witness something like this, and you know, training that goes into witnessing something like this, how is that worked through? Is it just counseling? Is it just part of the job? How is that done for somebody in law enforcement?
Well, we have provided training in the past, and we have advocated for training of pre-incident training to let you know that your reactions to critical incident stress, which is what that is called, are normal, and to provide coping strategies and mechanisms to officers before they get into those critical incident stress situations. And then we also we try to provide resources to folks once they get into those critical incident stress situations. And mainly it's getting coworkers and supervisors to recognize the signs of critical incident stress, and to make sure that officers know that they have resources to cope with those things. And throughout my career, we've had officers who have been more severely impacted than others by different scenarios, but it is something that we're always watching out for sure.
As you have said, there have been 3 incidents, I believe you said, since December. You recently became chief. How is it different dealing with this as chief than just a member of law enforcement?
these kinds of incidents, there's a different level of expectation, and because you are the person who's ultimately responsible. So it is, I have complete and 100% confidence in our team, but at the end of the day, there's one person responsible, and that's me. So I have a kind of a greater level of responsibility, but I've been in the command staff of the Marion Police Department since 2007, and I spent the majority of that time being in charge of the investigations unit of the police department, the detectives, and the actual police work part is the part I have the most experience with as being the chief. It's the things that you don't know a chief does until you're sitting in the chief's chair that we're still learning and trying to become more familiar with.
When these press releases come out, a lot of times we read the Marion Police Department was assisted by the sheriff's office, the prosecutor's office, and the coroner's office. What is that relationship like?
We have an outstanding relationship with our law enforcement partners. Just yesterday, we had a full day of training that we partnered with the Marion County Sheriff's Office. We provide an annual training to the police department every year, and we have for a long time. And this year, we joined in with the sheriff's office so we could both get that training at the same time together. And Sheriff Bales came from the Marion Police Department. He was actually one of my training officers, and he's my neighbor, so we have an outstanding relationship. We work every day with the coroner's office, and we work every day with the prosecutor's office, and have outstanding relationships. So, you know, on a murder scene, the sheriff helped us answer our regular calls for service until our third shift folks could get in to take those calls. Mm. The coroner responded with Dr. Davis and his partner April Short, and Ray Grogan came to the scene, as he does on all murder charges as well. So we work together as a team, and we work together very well.
Not to say anything of any past people in these positions, any of these positions, but has it gotten better with the particular group that's in there now?
We got along just fine with the prior sheriff, but there's a level of familiarity and a level Matt Bales was one of my training officers when I started in police work, and like I said, he lives two doors away from me, and so I have had way more contact with Sheriff Bales than I've had in the past, and that's simply due to a level of familiarity, and we know each other so well that our relationship is an outstanding one on a personal level, and then it's an outstanding one on a departmental level. That's not to say anything bad about the prior sheriff. It's just we don't have the same experiences. So, but we got along just fine with Sheriff Bailey as well.
Is there an example of how that relationship is better now just because of the personal relationship?
Well, for sure. I think the training is the first example, but there's other examples where because we've become executives at the same time, we have the ability to call each other and run scenarios and situations past each other. Because we have that personal relationship, but also because we've become the chief and the sheriff basically at the same time.
You know, you've become chief recently, as a lot of people know here. What has that transition been like for you?
Well, it is, like I said, there are things that you don't know because you're not doing this job until you're doing this job. And the police work part is something that I have a lot of experience with, and that's not something I'm not going to say I don't struggle with it, but that's something I know how to do. It's the other parts of being a law enforcement executive about sending out invoices and to make sure that I have scheduling issues Quite frankly, when I became the acting chief in the middle of October, and it was all COVID all the time. And as we have gotten a better handle on COVID, I've begun to be able to do other things, implement new projects and ideas and policies. But it's those kinds of things. And when I got promoted, a new major got promoted. And so we had two members of our command team in new spots. And that created a shuffle in assignments. And so we were, you know, finding our way, but we did it pretty quickly, and we have a great team, and I'm just excited about the future of the police department.
We just passed the one-year anniversary of this pandemic, the first case in Ohio this week. What has it been like for law enforcement, as you say, it's COVID all the time?
Yeah, it is not something that we've ever been trained to deal with, but we had to adapt our way of doing business. We had to adapt our way of communicating with the public. We had to adapt our community policing strategy, and a lot of things that we used to do, we weren't able to do this past 12 months. And everything from our civilian volunteers to our outreach to Marion's young people, all of that stuff had to be evaluated. But we also were dealing with the core businesses of the police department. And how do we do traffic stops? And how do we do domestic violence calls in houses? And how do we make sure our people are protected and that we're not spreading the virus and we're not contracting the virus? And then how do I deal with officers on quarantine? And how do I deal with officers who actually contract the virus? And do we have enough PPE? And how does that all work? I mean, we were literally having meetings in the beginning of this about mass burial sites. Now, thank God we didn't get there, but I never considered some of the things that we had to consider when this all started.
You know, COVID is still the talk everywhere, and the vaccinations have become available to a lot of people, are becoming available to a lot more people starting on Thursday. One of the first groups that it was available to back, I believe, in late December, early January, were the first responders. And there are a lot of stories coming out now all over the country that a lot of first responders did not take the vaccination. What was the feeling in the police department?
Well, the CDC said that first responders included law enforcement in the beginning, and Ohio did not. They adopted different rules, and we had to push to get law enforcement officers the access to the vaccine. In fact, the Marion County Commissioners, the Marion City Council, and the Mayor's Office all contacted the governor, urging him to change his designations on who was eligible for the vaccine. But once the vaccine became available to law enforcement, we have about 60, maybe a little bit higher, 60% of law enforcement officers who have taken the vaccine. I have several others trying to still get vaccine, but there are members of the Marion Police Department and in law enforcement elsewhere who are not sure about the vaccine, and that's their right.
Are you surprised by that?
Yeah, I would have been the first one in line. But I understand, and I also understand I have young people who they want to know how this impacts childbearing and how this impacts things, and they're researching and talking to medical professionals, and if the situation becomes one that they want a vaccine, the Marion Police Department will help them help them find a vaccine. We've been very proactive in making sure everybody who wants the vaccine has a plan and has access to get the vaccine. But cops are no different than any other people. We're not a monolithic organization here, and our people have certainly the right to have their own concerns and questions answered before they receive a medical procedure. But the minute I could take a vaccine, I took it.
When you took the vaccine, you know, we've been just asking everybody this, was it okay? How did it go?
I felt like I got punched in the arm. My second vaccine comes on March the 23rd, and we'll see how that goes. I've had officers who've had both shots or some who've had the Johnson & Johnson shot, who had some comparatively mild reactions, nothing more than 24 hours of a reaction, certainly none that have caused any concern about their future health. And I'm encouraging everybody to take the vaccine. I'm encouraging all of the people here to take the vaccine, and I hope for 100% vaccinated rate. And I believe we'll eventually get to numbers closer to that. But I'm supportive of those who want to do more research and ask more questions.
We're chatting with Marion Police Chief Jay McDonald. It's 44 minutes past the hour. We'll spend 15 more minutes with the chief here, and we certainly appreciate his time this morning for our first chance to speak with him since he became chief on the air. Chief, you talked about the drug issue, and it certainly was the big talk before the pandemic came in. It's kind of taken second fiddle since the pandemic. But what is that scene like in Marion at this point?
Well, the drug issue continues to be a very significant issue for our community. Like I said, fatal drug overdoses, the numbers rose in 2020 over 2019. And we continue to attack that in a variety of ways. Certainly, we continue to attack the supply side of that scenario through enforcement, through targeting of major drug offenders, through the MarMet Drug Task Force, but we're also attacking it through the demand side by a new program called a Quick Response Team that we've partnered with MarMet, which is the Sheriff's Office and the Prosecutor's Office and the Police Department, and we've partnered with drug treatment providers, and people who have a drug overdose now get a visit from a drug treatment provider to explain the resources that are available and the treatment options that are available, and MarMet pays in cooperation with the Adam H. Board for that project to try to get more people into treatment to prevent fatal drug overdoses that we see so often in our community. So we are reaching out into the community, trying to provide resources to those who want to seek treatment, and we're trying to provide them the pathway to obtain that treatment.
We all have heard about the drug issue. Drugs have been around for a very long time. We all want to be hopeful. We all want to be optimistic. Is there any way we're ever going to help this problem, see the numbers go down, get things going in the right direction?
Well, I certainly hope so, and I believe I believe that attacking the drug problem has to come from three different perspectives. There's the enforcement perspective, which we're pretty good at. There's the treatment perspective, which we're getting much, much better at. And then there's the prevention aspect that we have to do much, much better to prevent people from getting involved in drugs to start. We have started a program that we're really proud of called TAPS, and TAPS stands for Teen and Police Service Academy, and where we provide mentoring to at-risk kids, and we are in the midst of our first session with that. It's an 11-week program where law enforcement officers from the Marion Police Department pair up with a middle school-aged at-risk youth, and we try to provide mentoring and programming and personal interaction to try to prevent lots of issues that plague our society, including drugs. And we will continue to do things like that to try to make a positive impact on the community. But it's going to take more than just the police. It's going to take more than just the schools. It's going to take parents and neighbors and churches to all get together to prevent people from becoming involved with drugs. That'll swing the tide.
In the last few years, we have seen changes in the position of prosecutor and judges here in town, and police chief and sheriff, and we've been hearing a lot about stricter sentences for people who are dealing drugs and who have abused drugs. Is, in your opinion, is that the right way to go?
Well, I certainly believe it's the right way to go for major drug offenders. The laws of the state of Ohio have changed dramatically and will continue to change about drug users. And drug users now are people with small amounts of drugs are not going to prison, and they are given opportunities through probation, through what's called treatment in lieu of conviction, and diversion to receive help for their problems. And we support those efforts here at the police department. We support drug courts. We support the efforts to try to get people into recovery, as opposed to people in prison who are drug users. But people who come in and prey upon those users and sell drugs that are mixed with deadly fentanyl that users may not be aware they're getting, yeah, I'm in support of strict sentence for people who are those kinds of offenders.
You know, Chief, you're a member of the community. You're out in the community. Monday, you were talking about heading over to city council when you got the call about the whole Cummins Avenue incident. And we also talked about the media and what the Columbus media descends upon Marion for. And there have been a lot of those instances as of late. And one of those last week, of course, had to do with the auditor and $1.28 million being paid to the wrong account. Just as a citizen of Marion, do you have any feeling on that story?
Yeah, but my feeling is I'm looking for more information to determine what impact that has made on the community and what impact that's made on law enforcement. I don't know those answers as of yet, but I do know that it is something that we would like to learn more about, but it has had no impact on the Marion Police Department as of yet. Our people have gotten paychecks, and nobody has told me I couldn't spend. The mayor hasn't told me I couldn't spend our allotted budgeted resources and those kinds of things. But I think those questions are best left to the city council and the city administration to figure out what happened and how best to fix it. Because quite frankly, I got my hands full with the police department, and I don't know all the ins and outs of why that happened and what we need to do to fix it.
The other question, not regarding that, but regarding obviously a major story, you can't get away from it here in town, is the trial of Judge Warner, which has certainly dominated some Columbus media and our local media here as of late. The mayor has called for Judge Warner to step down. I believe Matt Bales called for Judge Warner to step down. Do you believe the judge should resign?
Well, the mayor and Sheriff Bales are both elected officials, and I am not. It is not my job to tell other people who should resign or not. But I will tell you that the charges are serious. I will tell you that the allegations are disturbing, and I will tell you that Judge Warner deserves his day in court. But the allegations are disturbing, for sure.
Just one more question on that. Are you surprised by the situation? It was an unusual occurrence, for sure.
Well, yeah, I was surprised to learn and hear about the allegations. As somebody with some experience with Judge Warner, I was surprised to hear that had happened, or that had alleged to happen. The Marion Police Department has had zero involvement in this. The incident took place outside of the city of Marion. We have not been involved. I have not read the report, and I don't have any knowledge of the investigation other than the same knowledge that you have from trying to pay attention to the court proceedings and those kinds of things. But it is, it's disturbing. It's disturbing, and the allegations are very serious, and the charges are serious, and we'll see what comes of this as it makes its way through the court.
And again, not calling or asking anybody to, but were you surprised he did not resign when the charges were brought and a court date was set? That seemed to surprise a lot of people.
I'm sure it did. I get asked about it a lot. Like I said, he's entitled to his day in court, but it certainly seems that, I will tell you this, that if the allegations and the charges were filed, against the judge, and these allegations turn out to be true, then severe penalties should follow, just as they should follow for anybody.
And I appreciate your candor on that. Chief McDonald, I want to spend our last 5 minutes on this. Since you have been police chief or just involved in law enforcement, what's the most difficult part of that job?
Well, the job has changed a lot in my career. It is just the technology and the change in the community. I've often said that this job is less physical than it was 20 years ago, but more dangerous. And by that I mean every single weekend there were bar fights and those kinds of things, and that doesn't happen in the frequency that it used to. But it's also more dangerous with more guns and more law enforcement officers across the country being targeted for violence simply because of the uniform they wear. But the technology has changed dramatically from body cams to computers and cars to a lot of law enforcement now is evaluation of technology, whether it be social media sites or cell phones or you know, who knows what else. So it has rapidly changed, but the most difficult part of policing these days is Marion police officers and being held responsible, unfairly so, for things that have happened in other places. The Marion Police Department has had an outstanding relationship with the community, and things that have happened in other places have an unfair consequence on Marion police officers. But our officers have never been more diverse. We've never been better trained. We've never been more highly educated than we are today, and we have more to do. But I'm proud of the Marion Police Department. I'm proud of the officers that I work with, and I'm proud of this community for the way that we have handled that controversy and the stress that results from that controversy and that angst that the community has felt over the last 12 months.
What consequence has the community faced, and which controversy, just to make things
clear?
Oh,
I'm talking about civil unrest and the things and the questions and the concerns that have been rightfully raised over incidents that we've all watched unfold on TV, but they have not happened here.
Oh, okay. When it comes to doing this job, stand your ground has become a big issue here in Ohio. What do you make of the change in that law, and is it a good idea, in your opinion?
Well, it remains to be seen if it's a good idea or not. There are questions about how it will be applied and how it will impact public safety. I firmly believe in everybody's right to defend themselves, but I also don't believe that that we should be encouraging violent responses. So we'll see how it unfolds over time. But the best way to deal with violence is to try to de-escalate it, whether it be at the cops level or at the citizens level. And there may be times where that's not possible, but there is also times where it allows for an escalation, and we'll wait and see if that is the result or not. But it's certainly a concern.
You know, it's very interesting because we look at the state, we look at the local level, we look at the national level. There have been a lot of charges brought against a lot of people and a lot of people who are awaiting trial, not talking about any one person here. But people don't seem to leave those positions anymore. They seem to stay through the trials. They seem to stay as long as they can. It didn't used to be that way. Is that a surprising thing to you?
Well, I'm a firm believer in due process for everybody, but I think you're right. I think that that there has been a change in how you deal with that, and basically the is to ignore, deflect, and make a counter accusation to avoid the scrutiny that comes your way. So we'll see how that comes, but I think your observation is correct.
With 1 minute left, Chief, and I thank you for the time, what's the best part of your job?
Oh, the best part of my job is to be able to be a part of a team that makes a positive impact on this community by working with youth, by working with community groups, by working with faith groups, by working with our fellow law enforcement partners to do good things in this community.
Police Chief Jay McDonald, I know it's a busy time for you, and I'm sorry we have not had a chance to speak since you became chief, but I'm so glad you gave us the time this morning, and I hope you can come on again in the future.
All right. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you. Police Chief Jay McDonald, there you go. The update on the horrible, horrible story from Monday night on Cummins Avenue, issues involving Judge Warner, issues involving the city auditor, and issues involving the Marion community in general. So there you have it. Glenn Coble coming up from 10:10 till 12 noon with myself, and then Progressive Life, 12:10 to 1 p.m., Offbeat News and Trivia with Nate Redmond, 4 to 5, and the Trinity Baptist Church Sunday Sermon from 6 till 7. Stay tuned.
From Scott Spears at the 2016 Republican National Convention.
Good morning, we're on the air.
Hey, Charlie, it's Scott.
Scott! Oh, wow! Okay, we've been wanting to hear from you, Scott.
Well, I tell you, this morning I did something different. Yesterday we were outside with the protesters, so today I made sure we got here a little earlier,
uh-huh.
Got through the checkpoints, calling you from Cleveland, Ohio, Republican National Convention.